opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Fan Hotline, that's presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Donnie Chedrick with you tonight until 10:35. Gorgeous Charlie Borges is behind the glass. Got you for 3.5 more hours, already 1 hour in. Some good Pirates discussion out there, and we will keep that going on the Fan Hotline with Noah Hiles from the Post-Gazette joining us here on our video stream. If you are watching the YouTube live stream, you're seeing Noah sporting a hat that I am very fond of, Noah, a Steelers Super Bowl 30 cap. Obviously, a game that did not go the Steelers' way. But that Super Bowl logo for me, just as an aside, that's one of the best ones. So anything I can find that is Steelers related to Super Bowl 30, I'm a sucker for it.
I totally agree. I have a hat collection of, I would say on the conservative side, at least 200 different hats. This might be my favorite one that I own. I wear it probably most regularly out of every hat that I have. The logo is sweet. I think anything early to mid 90s Steelers, just because that decade, that era, gets a little overlooked because they didn't win the champion. They didn't win a championship, but like those teams were still really, really good. And so anytime I can find something, you know, along the lines of a Rod Woodson to Cordell Stewart, like anything in that window, I eat it up. I love that era of merch.
And they had the, they still had the block numbers back then before they made the change in the late 90s. It was glorious, Noah. Do you get like comments from people like, will you wear a hat like that on a Pirates road trip where you're there for work, but you know, let's say you're making a flight to San Diego and you got the, do you ever have a Steelers Super Bowl 30 hat on for that trip?
I don't know if I've ever wore this on a flight, just because typically I always pack hats on a flight that I would be comfortable putting in a backpack.
You don't want to mess up the hat.
A little crease or beat up. I don't want to do that here. Now, like I've worn this to like plenty of dive bars in Pittsburgh and it came home smelling a little bit like cigarette smoke or whatever, but I don't want it to like be like pressed down because I love the shape of how this hat looks, which is, you know, this conversation is just doing nothing for people listening on the radio right now. But yeah, I like keeping the shape that it is, so I wouldn't wear this on a flight.
A producer that was also here around the same time you were, I was in my infancy here as well. I know that you're familiar with Michael Garr, who used to work overnights on the AM side of things. He has like a huge collection of minor league baseball hats, so I assume that had to be a topic of conversation for you guys at some point.
I've contributed to that collection. Anytime I go to a minor league ballpark for my job now, or just for the heck of it, if I'm on vacation or if I'm in a city somewhere and there's a minor league game in town, you know me, I love baseball. So I'll swing by and I'll hit him up because I still talk with Garb at least once a week, still a really good friend of mine. So I'll say like, hey, do you have a Daytona Tortugas hat? And if he doesn't, then he will by the time I get home from that trip.
I feel bad that the 2 summers I did West Virginia Black Bears baseball, which really in the grand scheme of minor league names is pretty uncreative, like considering some of the names you see around minor league baseball. I had to have told him on multiple occasions I would get him a hat, and I just never did it. So now I feel bad for that not happening. But they're now defunct, so he would have had to put that in like the retirement category of his minor league hats. Anyway, Noah, Pirates, you could say jobbed by a bad call on Friday night. The Henry Davis at bat is where I want to start the Pirates conversation here. The outrage from that game, some of the reception from that game that you were able to feel Friday night, you know, within the team and in the clubhouse.
Yeah, I mean, that was the most collectively pissed I've seen the Pirates since I started covering them for the Post-Gazette. Like this regime, like that's not to say they've been dejected after a loss before. That's clearly happened a number of times, but that team felt like they were disrespected, that they weren't viewed on the same level as the San Diego Padres, as if they were just an inferior class of player, like product, that they just weren't on that level. And in a way, that's not an incorrect assessment. Like the Padres are just a better organization top to bottom. They've had more success. They pay more. Their players are better. Their coaches are better. So there is some truth to that I think stings. But they were upset because they felt like if the Padres are in that situation, they get that call. Or even a different hitter. If Andrew McCutchen's at the plate and watches that pitch, because he's Andrew McCutchen, because he's been to 5 All-Star games and won an MVP, he probably gets that call. But because Henry Davis, a guy who's immensely unproven, is at the plate and he's batting for the Pirates, a team that's well in last place, against Robert Suarez, or that would have been Adam, excuse me, one of the best setup men in baseball, they lose the benefit of the doubt there. The strike zone's a little wider for those guys. That's just how baseball is. And so that pissed them off. And that the messaging was that we, speaking as like what Andrew McCutchen said, he said, we need to earn that respect. We need to play well enough to when we eventually can get into that category of being the Padres where we get those calls as opposed to having those calls go against us.
What is that reaction like for some of you guys in, you know, the media booth when, you know, especially when you're on the road? So there's not like as many familiar faces around. You got you have Alex, you have some others, but I know that there's no, you know, you're not allowed to be a fan in that moment, but there has to just be a natural reaction to a major blunder of a call from you guys. Like, was there any emotion from you watching that being like, oh man, like they got screwed there?
I wouldn't say emotion, but like for me, especially like I need to have a story on the Post-Gazette's website within 3 minutes of the game ending. So in the 8th inning, I'm putting the final touches on what I think is going to be a recap of that game. And in that situation, 3-2 count, bases loaded, 2 outs, top of the 8th inning, I was like, this is the at-bat that's going to determine if I have to start a whole new story or not. So when that pitch gets called for a strike 3, I mean, I think originally, selfishly, I'm going, okay, cool. Like, I don't have to rewrite the story. They're not scoring against Suarez next inning, so this game's over. But then, like, that's just like your first instant reaction. But then you look and you're like, because the monitors at Petco Park are like a pitch behind, which I really appreciate. I hate when they're like timed live because I like to be able to watch the replay. Mm-hmm. And then so I watch it and we're behind home plate. So you don't really have an idea as to how bad the call was.
Right.
Then you watch the replay monitor and you're like, oh no, this has created a whole different type of vibe for post game. Cause if he watched an actual strike three, is what it is. Like, oh, bad at bat. Or if it's close, but when it's that blatantly bad, and then you're on Twitter and you're seeing, you know, screen recordings of Mitch Keller coming out of the tunnel and yelling, and Donnie Kelly and Kutch with the stare down, and Matt Haig after the game, you're making notes of all of this because now you're thinking, all right, is there another story to come of this? Like, if there was a confrontation between the umpires and if the umpires were trying to antagonize the Pirates, which did not happen, then that's another story. So it basically adds to your line of questioning. And on that night specifically, typically I do just a game story and then three takeaways from every game. But for that one, I just said, screw the three takeaways. There's one takeaway from this game. And it's what happened in that at bat and how the Pirates reacted to it. And so, yeah, it changed a little bit of how I went about my day. I wouldn't say, like I said, it gives you like an emotional reaction, but it is just kind of like, it's kind of like when you're on the air and news breaks, Donnie, you're like, all right, well, you know, I know we have guests scheduled. I know we had these topics planned to talk about and these blocks, these segments, but we're going to have to kind of pivot, throw that all out the window because this is the story of the day.
Do you think, maybe not this call specifically, but just a buildup of some calls like this, how far away do you think Major League Baseball actually is from either the robot umps being a thing or some sort of tweak to the review system in which teams can maybe use a challenge or two a game on a ball strike call?
I think the ABS is going to be here next year. I wrote about it in spring training. And I know, you know, spring training baseball isn't a priority for a lot of people to watch. Maybe they'll tune in for a few innings here and there. But I think what made spring training really interesting this year was the ABS system, because just talking with a lot of guys during the preseason, they all kind of acknowledged, like, some of them liked the idea, some of them did not like the idea at all. But all of them were willing to admit, like, this is probably going to be a regular part of our game in the next 1 to 2 years. Personally, I like the human element of baseball. However, I do think that if you're able to challenge other areas of the game, if you're able to challenge if a ball was fair or foul, if you're able to challenge if a guy got underneath a tag at a close call to base, then you should be able to challenge balls and strikes. I like the challenge system with ABS. I would hate to see the game be 100% robotic strike zone. I do like the idea that you have to adjust to a guy's zone depending on who's back there behind the plate, depending on who's on the mound. I think that's something that makes baseball unique. But I anticipate ABS having at least a little of appearance next year in the regular season.
I think it could almost be similar to how the NFL has used, it won't be like the full-fledged replay system, but they'll use like the video assist or replay assist.
Yeah.
I feel like for a ball strike call, it can be something pretty quick and painless like that. Like, hey, we missed this one.
Yeah. I wrote about it, like I said, in spring training. I think the average review takes like under 15 seconds. It's pretty interesting. Like watching it in spring, in that case, like for Henry Davis, he watches that pitch. It's called a strike three. All you do is hitter taps his head and the game pauses and there's no like umpires going and looking in, like, you know, like going under the hood like they do in the NFL or used to do or whatever. It just, the Jumbotron in the stadium turns into a strike zone grid and it just shows where the ball came on the grid. It's very like exciting, you know, dramatic. And then you all watch it together as in the stadium, and it shows where the ball came through on the strike zone. And if it was in the zone, then it's a strike. If not, it's a ball. But like it shows it in front of everyone in real time. And I think that adds more excitement to the game. It doesn't add a ton of time to the game, especially if you're only able to do it a couple times a game. Now, if you're able to do it for like every pitch, that will get annoying. But I don't think that'll happen. I think it'll just be two or three times. And I think that makes the game better if you're getting those calls right.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hello, Noah. It's producer Charlie. You said that you enjoy the human aspect of the robots, and I do as well. Or not the robots, the umpires. Would it be easier, instead of the review system, to just have them speak after the games? Because we always hear about from the players and the managers about the calls, but we never hear from the umpires themselves and the humans making these calls. Would it be easier to just hear from them and what they were thinking at the time?
Sure would be. That was something a couple players actually brought up to me after Friday night's loss. I had two different guys in the Pirates clubhouse come up to me and go, "Do you have access to the umps?" And I was like, "Well, what do you want me to do? You know, hang on now." But then they're like, "No, it's funny that, you know, when we mess up, you're able to come in here and ask us about it, and we have to stand in front of TV cameras and cell phones and recorders and everything and explain what we did wrong, but they don't have to." And I said, "Yeah, that's a very fair point." And I've been like a pool reporter in past instances when I covered Pitt. There were like a couple of missed calls or something that I had to look into. But for this, I mean, it's just a judgment call. So there's nothing really you could ask. I mean, you could ask them, "Why'd you call that a strike?" And they could say, "I thought it was a strike." And then that's really the end of the conversation. And I told them, like, I asked, I was like, "Was there a bigger confrontation after the game? Like, were they antagonizing you as they were leaving the field? Because if so, that's a story." And then I could request pool access and, you know, we could learn more about that situation. But that, like, no one really had any grievances over what took place after the game. It was just everyone was upset about the call. And I was like, you know, I We unfortunately do not have access to just ask them about that one call. I agree that they should be available to answer for their performance, because their performance has just as much of an impact on the overall final score as the players.
Talking to Noah Hiles, he covers the Pirates from the Post-Gazette. Noah, shifting gears just to the overall job done by Donnie Kelly in his first 22 games, it certainly feels to me, and I don't think I'm alone in this, it feels to me like we're seeing at least a much more spirited baseball team out there, a more respectable baseball team out there on every given night. Does it mean they're a good team? No, but they at least look more lively under Donnie Kelly than they did under Derek Shelton.
Yeah, I totally agree. My May report card ran this morning. You can check that out at post-gazette.com. And I gave Don Kelly an A. First A I gave to anybody on the Pirates this year. And this isn't to say, I mean, he's not out here pulling strings like 2016 Terry Francona, you know. But at the same time, you look at what this guy inherited. He inherited a team filled with injuries, filled with people in slumps, underperforming, and a team that was pretty much eliminated from the idea of playing relevant baseball 8 days into the second month of the regular season. So that's tough. That's tough. That's a lot to fix. There's a lot of work that goes into getting that group to collectively improve. And he's done that. I mean, like you said, they're not an amazing team right now. They're still playing below 500 baseball under Don Kelly, but they're playing competent baseball. They're not making the same types of mistakes they make defensively on the bases. They're putting together better at-bats game by game. I think the starting pitching has been better in the sense where you're seeing guys play to their own strengths as opposed to attacking the weaknesses of who they're facing. And overall, everyone's just a little loose and playing with a little bit more energy. I think that naturally comes from when a change like that is made. I don't know if the whole team was excited to see Shelton leave. I think a couple of guys certainly were. But overall, I think just the idea of they knew this was coming. They knew that he entered this season on the hot seat, and if they didn't start playing well instantly, that chatter was only going to become more frequent. And then when they played as bad as they did in April, they knew, oh, it's only a matter of time till this guy gets canned. And when you know your boss is about to get fired, and you're a big reason as to why he's about to get fired, that weighs on you. And after he was let go, it felt like a cloud was lifted away from them, and they were able to just kind of relax and play some baseball. And I think that what we've seen in these 3+ weeks under Kelly is what this team's real potential is. Still average at best, but they're not as bad as they were throughout all of April and early May. They're still not good, but they're a lot better than what they played as in their first 40-ish games of the season.
We had Jim Leland on not long after, I think it was actually right before Don Kelly was about to manage his first real game, not the game he filled in for Shelton due to a kid's graduation, like his first real game. His big piece of advice beyond just being himself was to hire a veteran bench coach, and he goes out and he hires Gene Lamont. That's about as veteran as you can get, and the man also managed one of the more lively and fun Pirates teams of the last 30 years, you could say. What type of impact has he seemingly had here so far?
I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I think what's interesting is these guys that Donnie's brought in, Lamont, Truby, giving Ravello more responsibility, they've all kind of like done a really good job of laying low. And I don't think that's by design. I don't think everyone's like going out of their way to being like, all right, it's the Don Kelly show. He's the only one that gets attention. But I think that what allows Lamont to execute his role well is that You know, he ain't gunning for another job, right? Like, he's 70 plus years old. He's not thinking about what's next. He's thinking about what's now. And when you're in that frame of mind, you're maybe not as present when the media is around, or you kind of just lurk in the shadows and speak when called upon to speak. And I think that there's value to that, because in a situation like Don Kelly was placed in, it's easy for a lot of other people to be hungry for opportunities as well. You know, when everything's falling apart, everyone starts reaching for scraps. But bringing in guys like Lamont, like I said, Truby, and promoting other people to have more responsibility in the org, guys that you could trust and who aren't going to make it all about themselves, I think that that serves everyone better.
Dan Zangrilli from about 5 hours ago, he said, if you're under 50 years old, Andrew McCutchen is the greatest Pirates player of our generation. Is that something you would agree with? Would you maybe pull the timeline back a little bit from 50 years to 30 years, considering some of the other players that fall into that time span? Where do you come down on that comment?
I mean, Barry Bonds won 2 MVPs.
That was the first name that popped into my head. I know he wasn't here as long, and
yeah,
as a guy,
I mean,
people,
it wasn't like Barry was here for 3 years either.
Right.
Like, Barry Bonds was, what, 86 to 92?
Yeah, and we also know that as a person, people not very fond of Barry Bonds.
Right, yeah. Which, like, you could say that Andrew McCutchen, like, you could say, like, he's the best Pirate. In the sense of, like, not just performance-based, but, like, as far as embracing the city, he's willingly chose to come back here year after year after year, where, I mean, he might be the only guy in baseball who's actually made that decision. But if we're talking performance, again, Bonds won 2 MVPs in 6 years. 1/3 of the years that he played.
Yeah, and probably should have won a third.
Yes, and he helped them win 3 division titles. Andrew brought them to the playoffs 3 times, but, you know, they didn't really amount to much. So I would say that Kutch is, I would say, the face of Pirates baseball for people that age group. But if we're talking actual talent, I mean, Barry Bonds, I don't know how you could put anyone ahead of Barry Bonds.
I agree wholeheartedly with you, Noah. Noah Hiles, check out his stuff. He covered the Buccos for the Post-Gazette. Noah, as always, thanks for hopping on, man.
Absolutely, Donnie. Thanks for having me on.
There he goes. The Noah Constrictor, as Joe Starkey likes to call him.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. And let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Donnie Chedrick with you for about 3 more hours tonight. Charlie Borges with me behind the glass. Charlie, before we get into my best of the AFC North, I just saw something pop up on the Twitter timeline that I absolutely had to retweet. A big television show debut 23 years ago today, June 2nd, 2002.
2002. It's not Breaking Bad. It's too early for that.
Yeah.
Way too early for that.
An HBO show. That might help you a little bit.
Is it The Sopranos?
No, Sopranos was late 90s.
See, I'm thinking like Deadwood. Shows like that. I'm probably missing the big one.
The Wire.
I thought that was a late 90s, but now that you said that out loud.
2002.
I'm going to turn my mic off and hide back here in shame.
No need for that, Charlie. I'm sure that most of the other producers at this station are unfamiliar with The Wire's work.
I've seen it.
A young Michael B. Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Wood Harris in there as Avon Barksdale, Idris Elba.
A young Idris Elba.
Stringer Bell.
Michael K. Williams, RIP, yeah. As Omar, the iconic. And that word is thrown around way too much in this generation, but Omar and Michael K. Williams, a very iconic character.
He was.
I would say top five, top 10, maybe top five character in television show history.
Oh, man. That'd be a fun list for us to do at some point.
A top three HBO character.
That's what I was into my head. I'm thinking, well, if you're breaking it down to just HBO, I'm definitely putting Omar Little on there.
Tony Soprano's there, too.
Yes.
Tony, he may be number one.
I would put Tony Soprano at one if you're talking HBO specifically. But yeah, Omar from The Wire. Like, I always wonder how many people put out that Omar gif when the Steelers make a move and if they have any idea what that's even from, or if they just think, ha-ha, Omar Khan. But yeah, Omar Little, a fantastic character. Anyway, Charlie, we can get more into TV and movies and stuff later on, maybe with a little primetime potpourri at the end of tonight's show. But right now, this is a segment that I love doing at this time of the year. Early June, we are right around OTA / minicamp time. We are a little over 6 weeks away from the Steelers showing up in Latrobe and other teams around the NFL showing up to their training camp venues. It is ranking season. It is list season, things of that nature. So tonight, on Monday, June the 2nd, I am going to unveil my best of the AFC North list. Looking at every position or position group plus head coach, I will name who I think is the best team in the division at that spot. And Charlie, he's a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan, so he has no allegiances to anybody in the AFC North. He could call me out if he thinks I'm wrong. We could have that conversation after I'm done, but here we go. Head coach, I'm going to go with the Baltimore Ravens. Listen, folks, we need to grow up here a little bit. We have dogged John Harbaugh plenty in this town, but at this point, at this time, he is the best coach in the AFC North, and that includes one Michael Tomlin. Sure, He doesn't dominate the Steelers every year. He doesn't even really dominate the other teams in his division every year. This isn't Belichick against the AFC East or anything like that, but he is coming off two massive wins against the Steelers specifically. And you know what else he has over Mike Tomlin? Figuring out the quarterback situation not once, but twice. Tomlin inherited Ben Roethlisberger, and he has been unable to figure out the game's most important position since that man's retirement after the 2021 season. Harbaugh was hired, was part of the regime that then drafted Joe Flacco. They won a lot of games, including a Super Bowl. And then in 2018, Harbaugh also made the bold move to shift the offense to something completely different with Lamar Jackson midseason. A move that could have very likely saved John Harbaugh's career. The Ravens went on to win the AFC North in 2018 while they trailed the Steelers by multiple games midway through that season. They've been one of the most successful teams in the NFL in that time span. And although they haven't won the big one since Flacco in the 2012 season, they are consistent division and playoff winners, even if it's just one game in the postseason. Quarterback, you can also say the Baltimore Ravens. And you can quibble here and say Joe Burrow if you want to, who is the better pure passer of the pair. But that Super Bowl appearance at this point is doing an awful lot of heavy lifting for Burrow over the course of these two careers. He is one of the only guys to beat Patrick Mahomes in the postseason. I understand that. But again, that is starting to do a lot of heavy lifting for JB. I'd be lucky to have either one. Don't worry, but I'm giving the edge to Jackson here. He is a two-time MVP, and like Barry Bonds with the Pirates in the early 90s, he should be a three-time MVP. He's another person we love to dog in this town, and we rode that he struggles against the Steelers narrative as long as we possibly could, but I'm afraid those days are over. Jackson ended that pretty emphatically in the playoffs. The Ravens have won the AFC North four times in the last seven seasons since Jackson took over midway through that 2018 season, including the last two division crowns in the AFC North. The last time they had won the North before Jackson's arrival was 2012. That same year they won the Super Bowl with Joe Flacco. Running back, Baltimore again, 3-for-3 for the Ravens. This one isn't even close. Derrick Henry is going to be remembered as the best running back of his era. He is a special breed that would be fitting in with the best running backs over really any generation of football. He's that damn good. People wondered if the Ravens were getting a player that was over the hill when they signed him to his original deal last offseason. It turns out they got a massive bargain. At age 30, the man ran for 1,921 yards, 16 touchdowns, which led the NFL, all on 325 attempts. He had 113 yards per game, the third highest of his NFL career. This is a runaway win for Baltimore. And it kind of looks like that run he had against the Steelers in the playoffs. You know the image I'm talking about. Derrick Henry about 5 to 10 yards away from about 7 Steelers defenders. That's how far and away they won this debate with the best running back in the division. Wide receiver. Finally, somebody can knock Baltimore off the perch, and it's Cincinnati. This is another pretty easy one. The Bengals' ability to bring back Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins gives them not only the best receiving core in the AFC North, but one of the best in football. Chase was the league's Triple Crown winner last season. He led the league in receptions with 127. He led the league in yards with 1,708 and in touchdowns with 17. T. Higgins, as his sidekick, 73 receptions, 911 yards, 10 touchdowns. By the way, he played in just 12 games. So they had a real chance, if Higgins was healthy the whole way, to have two receivers that had 100-plus catches, 1,000-plus yards, and they both already had double-digit touchdowns. The Ravens have Zay Flowers, and I think he is a very good player. The Steelers have DK Metcalf, who is a very good player. The Browns don't really have anybody that deserves to be in the conversation here, so an easy check mark for Cincy. Tight end, it goes back to the Baltimore Ravens. One for one, you could argue that maybe the Browns have the better of the tight ends in the division. If you're going one for one purely with starters, if you want to go with David Njoku, you can make that argument with me, but I'm still not sure how many I like more than Mark Andrews around the league, even after a down year that ended with a very down moment, if you recall what happened in the AFC's divisional round in Buffalo. And on top of that, they have Isaiah Likely with Mark Andrews. That is what gives Baltimore the check here. That pair of tight ends combined for 17 touchdowns last season. And Andrews, again, in a down year, still had 11 of them. No team in the division really has a weak tight end, I would say. Njoku, Gesicki, Freiermuth. I don't think any of the tight ends are bad in the division. I just happen to think the Ravens have a bit of a two-headed monster, even if the career of Mark Andrews is going a little bit downhill at this point. Offensive line, another close one. Baltimore again. I'd like to see the Steelers get there. I think the Browns are close. I'll get to a reason or the reason why they're not in a moment. The Steelers just aren't there yet because we can't count on Broderick Jones and Troy Fautanu being stars at their respective tackle spots without really seeing it. Zach Frazier might already be the Steelers' best offensive player, pound for pound, but the Ravens get the edge here because they do have a center that's just as good, and even if we call that a wash, Tyler Linderbaum is a very, very good player, and Ronnie Stanley has turned into a perennial Pro Bowler at left tackle, and Roger Rosengarten has actually given them, or had actually given them, some decent play as a rookie at right tackle. And there's two solid guards there in Baltimore as well. That's why, as a collective, I think it goes to them in this situation, especially with the highlights they have at center and left tackle. The Browns, they had this down for a few years. I thought their core offensive line into the 2020s was very good, but we are starting to see some cracks due to injury. Jedrick Wills is also out of there, but Wyatt Teller had injuries last year. Jack Conklin has been injury-riddled. DeJuan Jones had to miss time last season as well, so it's not quite the same Browns offensive line as it was, but I do think they could still make an argument if they can bounce back this season. Defensive line. So the offense, pretty dominated by Baltimore. Cincinnati snuck in there with the wide receivers. Defensive line, Pittsburgh gets my pick for this one. And it's a tough one to declare for them, considering they had a playoff loss in which we saw them allow 300 yards rushing against the Ravens. But the Ravens did lose Big Michael Pierce to retirement, who may have given them the edge here if he was still on their roster. But Cam Hayward was just outstanding last season. And the Steelers then used their first-round pick and a later pick on the defensive line. Can Derek Harmon be the next Cam Hayward? Those are big shoes to fill. But for now, let's just hope he can help this defensive line ASAP. I don't know how much of a contributor Y.A. Black will be to this defensive line, especially as a rookie. We'll have to see on that. They have weaknesses like Liao and Loudermilk. The latter of the two has still been a decent special teams player. And I think even though Keanu Benton maybe disappointed some folks in 2024 because we expected a breakout, by no means do I think he is a bad player. So I like the Steelers here on the defensive front. Edge rusher, I will give Pittsburgh the edge here at edge. Even though every single team in the division has some guys that can get after the quarterback very well, the all-around play, and I think the collective group, puts the Steelers ahead. Myles Garrett is a monster. Trey Hendrickson is one of the most underrated players in football. And Kyle Van Noy is having a career renaissance in Baltimore and coming off a career high 12.5 sacks. TJ Watt, sack-wise, had one of his worst seasons in 2024. He only had 11.5, but he was better against the run, as the metrics say, than he ever has been in his professional life. And the Steelers also, as mentioned, they have the depth that not every other team in the AFC North or really around the league has. Alex Highsmith had 6 sacks last season in 11 games. Nick Herbig had 5.5 sacks in 13 games of really just part-time play. They also added Jack Sawyer in the draft, who will help round out what I would say is the best set of edge rushers in the AFC North, but not without heavy competition. Linebacker, inside linebacker, off-ball linebacker, whatever you want to call it, I give Baltimore the edge here in a position that is becoming a little less important over the course of time. The Ravens get the win for me, mostly because I think they have the best overall player there in a pretty easy discussion. Nobody else in the AFC North has a linebacker to the caliber of Roquan Smith. And nobody else in the AFC North has the complementary pieces to pass up what the Ravens have in that spot. I also like Trenton Simpson next to him in that defense. They lack a little bit of depth at the position, but I would give the nod here to the Ravens based on their two top guys that they have on the inside. Defensive backs, I go with Baltimore here too. Can maybe make a Steelers argument. Maybe. Browns have fallen off. We know that the Bengals have a historically bad defense. They weren't going to get the nod anywhere, really, besides wide receiver and a semi-argument at quarterback. The Ravens now have 4 first-round picks in their secondary. Kyle Hamilton has true defensive player of the year potential. Marlon Humphrey has been very good since his arrival in 2017. Nate Wiggins coming off a promising rookie season. The Ravens also used their first-round pick on Malachi Starks, who is expected to be the day-one starter at free safety. The Steelers have a decent group on paper. You can absolutely acknowledge that, but they need the play of Darius Slay to pay off for them, for a guy in his 30s. Minkah Fitzpatrick needs to have a big year, and Joey Porter cannot take another step back like we saw in 2024. And then kicker, it's Pittsburgh. Chris Boswell, 41 of 44 last season. He led the league in makes, 13 of 15 from 50-plus yards. He was perfect inside of 40 yards. I mean, how many games did the guy win or keep the Steelers in 2024? He physically won them the first game of the season. He made 6 field goals in the game in Atlanta. And even though the defense was awesome, he was more awesome. For my money, he's the best kicker in football, and I also commend him for bouncing back in a big way after bad 2018 and 2022. So to review here a little bit, head coach, that goes to Baltimore. Quarterback, running back also go to Baltimore. Wide receiver goes to Cincinnati. Tight end, offensive line, both go to the Baltimore Ravens. Pittsburgh takes defensive line and edge rusher. Linebacker and defensive back go to Baltimore. And then kicker goes to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Charlie, any quibbles with that list as an outside viewer here, as a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan? Any that I was just majorly off on?
Not that I could tell. One guy in the text line asked if you're a Ravens fan, which I can guarantee that you are not. I think it just kind of goes to show the shifting landscape of the AFC North. The big bad Steelers aren't the big bad Steelers anymore. And that the Ravens and Bengals have caught up exponentially in the last 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, the Ravens especially, I think the way that they have operated, and I do think that's a funny text. I don't take offense to that text. I mean, I am just realistic when it comes to the Steelers. I at least I feel that way. Sometimes I could get caught up in the black and gold blinders, but listen, the Ravens, even though it has not yielded them a Super Bowl in the Lamar Jackson era, it's without question they have been able to figure things out at quarterback a lot better. Harbaugh should get a lot of credit for that because he made a big-time move and a big-time shift to allow that to happen. The drafting and then moving on from Flacco, a Super Bowl winner who won you a lot of games.
Elite Joe Flacco, if you will.
I mean, it's fair to wonder. It is truly fair to wonder if the Steelers had a, you know, quarterback like Flacco, who won them a lot of games, wasn't really a pro bowler, wasn't really an all pro, although Big Ben was never actually an all pro player, won them a Super Bowl, had an elite run in that Super Bowl, was still playing decent but not great football. Would Tomlin have had the balls to make that move when Harbaugh did? Season was on the line. They weren't having a bad year. They were kind of just middling around 500. Harbaugh makes the switch to Lamar Jackson, and they take off. They were like 2 or 2.5 games behind the Steelers in the AFC North. They bolted past them. They won the division, kind of like they just did this past year, by the way. And that was that. Like, they have dominated this division, which has been a hard one to dominate. There's others around the league. The NFC East, you see a different winner every single year. I love the parity that a lot of NFL divisions have.
Used to be that way with the NFC South, too.
Yes.
There was like 6 years in a row where there was a different winner. And then Brady came to the Bucs, and it's been the
Yeah, that's also it's also the only division in football, I believe, since 2000 to have a Super Bowl rep out of all four teams. I don't think any other division can say that. But all four teams in the NFC South have had a team appear in the Super Bowl since 2000.
Yep.
Some of them multiple times.
Two of them have won.
But
with Saints and Bucks.
I mean, yeah, you're going to have a division like the AFC East, which was dominated for 20 years by the Patriots. Now, for the better part of a decade, has been dominated by the Bills. The AFC North has become a difficult division to have a stranglehold on. The Ravens have it. I mean, and you can even wonder the 2 years in the middle where the Bengals got their division crown, the Steelers got it in 2020, the COVID year. Lamar Jackson got hurt a couple of times. How would things have been different if it didn't happen that way? I don't know, but it feels pretty clear to me that the Ravens are the best run team in the AFC North.
I would agree from an outside perspective.
Cincinnati, outside of their best three players, I think they actually suck. I'm going to be honest.
Their defense is terrible, and the one guy that they do have, they're alienating by not giving him a new deal.
Yeah, they have Trey Hendrickson, but like if they don't have Burrow, Chase, Higgins,
they're like the
they're
Browns.
Bad. I mean, think about how good those three guys were last season, and they still didn't make the playoffs because the defense was that bad. Burrow was legitimately putting up MVP numbers. I went over what his receivers did. Two guys with double-digit touchdowns. Higgins, they would have had 2 1,000-plus-yard receivers, one of them being the Triple Crown. I actually think Cincinnati, outside of the top three guys, sucks. And I also think the Browns are going to be very bad.
I wouldn't doubt Jersey Shore legend Kenny Pickett with the Browns. Also, I do want to point out one more thing. Mike Gesicki, another Shore Conference New Jersey legend of Southern Regional.
Couple Penn State tight ends in the division, and neither one of them too shabby of players. Gesicki and Freiermuth.
If I remember, Gesicki was a hell of a wrestler in high school, too.
Well, that often translates to being pretty good at football. Zach Frazier was like a 4-time West Virginia state champion or something.
Yeah, that makes sense.
As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected.
Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.